Welcome back. This is hour two of Red Eyes Radio. We are talking with Brian Gerrish, a very interesting and important program about common purpose. And Brian, I want to kick things off here the second hour to talk a little bit about how this is changing society from within, especially from within the UK. You talked about this idea that society is being pulled apart. You mentioned that something new is coming in and the old is going out. And the question we have to ask ourselves is, of course, what is it that is coming in, and should we just surrender and leave the old way of governing ourselves, society, just leave that, or should we just, you know, pay more attention to the ideology that it seems to be incoming? A lot of people are looking at this now, and what would you say to that, Brian? How is this changing society from within the UK?
Well, we can now see a huge numbers of changes in our society, and we don't have to look back many years. We can go back 10 years. Certainly, if we go back 20 years, we see the huge difference in our present society. If I just do a summary of a few things for people, we are now living in Britain where we have well over 4 million CCTV cameras. So in every city now, there is a camera watching you at some point. We've recently had a law introduced, which means that CCTV cameras have been introduced in inside bars and pubs, as we know them in UK, so that if you go in for a drink with friends and colleagues, you're being filmed. And in fact, that was the case last night when I was with a group of people in a pub in Plymouth, and we were sat quietly in one of the rooms, and in a corner was a CCTV camera recording us. And the landlord has to make that tape available to the local police should they demand it. We have children being fingerprinted in school. We have the DNA from innocent people being kept on a huge database. We have the police increasingly acting in a very brutal and aggressive way, and that was highlighted during the G20 protests in London when a man was killed as a result of being attacked by the police.
Yeah.
We're seeing a huge number of laws coming in which affect everyday life, whether it's where you can park your car or whether you can smoke in the open air. We are seeing children being taken away from their parents, and that is done within a closed court system where the truth of the trial is never released to the public, and where parents have almost no route to appeal to get their children back. We are seeing almost compulsory immunization of people. We recently had the case where the government undertook a massive program to get parents to agree to have their young daughters, girls of about 13, given a vaccine which would supposedly protect them from cervical cancer.
Yeah.
And I will just add to that, because it's a fascinating statistic, that within a few months, about 1,700 young girls were suffering adverse effects, including for some of them paralysis.
Yeah.
We're seeing at the moment, and I'm sure you've seen some of this on the news overseas, we're seeing our MPs exposed as thieves and fraudsters. Mm. And this is not just happening in Parliament, this is happening throughout our public institutions. Now, I know no country is perfect, but if I think back 25 years or 30 years ago, in general, you would find that local officials were honest and were very, very careful where money was concerned. But now we're seeing more and more people putting their fingers into the money trough.
Yeah.
So we've got a mix of more and more laws which are bringing the UK towards a police state. We've recently seen the government pushing for about 50,000 low-grade officials, people like traffic wardens, to actually have the powers to watch, to spy on people, and and arrest them. And it only takes a little bit of thought and a little bit of looking out the window to see that what is actually unfolding in UK is a vicious police state. And because of the modern technology, we are looking at something which will make East Germany, for example, look like a holiday camp. So you watch a police state unfolding in the country, but what most people can't see, and they are becoming increasingly concerned that they can't see how this situation is happening, because it's like it's slowly creeping into position. And it was our work in looking at Common Purpose that began to give us a clue as to how this police state scenario was gradually being brought into position. I'd like to just bring you back a little bit, because in the beginning of the program we talked about an organization called Demos,
yes,
which Henrik, you quite rightly identified as having a Marxist base to it. But one of the gentlemen who was concerned with, intimately connected with Demos, was a man called Jeff Mulgan.
Yes.
And as well as promoting Demos and policy for successive Labour governments and now the Conservatives and the Liberal Democrats, he was involved in writing a book which was called The Invisible Hand, Remaking Charities for the 21st Century. And what he was proposing in the book was a way of beginning to change our society and culture, and it could be used in any other country, by growing what was known as the third sector, the charitable sector. So whereas most people, particularly older people, would regard charities as being totally good things, where usually people are unpaid and they give their best efforts in order to help their fellow man, what Mr. Mulgan was advocating was that these charities should be greatly increased in size, and that effectively they would be funded from government, and the charities themselves would then be used to help shape political policy and direction. Now, we know this is happening in UK because at the moment within the United Kingdom we have over 170,000 charities, and the total operational budget for those charities is over £44 billion.
Ooh, that's a lot.
Now, I have said to one or two audiences that if these charities had people's best interests at heart, we would surely be living in a wonderful country.
That's right.
Where nobody had any problems, and if they did, they could soon find a charity that would help them.
Yeah.
But when we look closer, what we actually find is going on is that major charities are actually being, I'll use the term sucking up, they are sucking up a political doctrine from other think tanks, and then the charities themselves are starting to put the political doctrine into place. If I take the example of smoking, now, I don't smoke, but I do not agree with the fact that we've now had a massive clampdown on smoking within UK, and we are making people who smoke almost like some form of lepers. But if we look in the background, we can find a charity which calls itself ASH, and that charity is really an extension of government, which is helping to promote this very strong anti-smoking agenda. If I give you another example, the NSPCC, which is for most people, a very well-respected charity to protect children from abuse. We've got that charity having shown itself to be openly pro-European and being prepared to say so in order to support new Labour foreign policy. So whereas in the old days, to be a bit simplistic, we would see that charities looked after people and kept away from politics, what we've now got within UK is a £44 billion charitable sector, which is helping to promote the latest government policy. Now, if I expand on this a bit, the charitable sector also includes or is linked with organisations which we call quangos. And I think that stands for a quasi-autonomous non-governmental organisation. But what it means really is an organisation which acts as if it's part of established government, but in reality is detached from government, although it does function purely on taxpayers' money. Now, the quangos, which have been set up throughout UK to do a number of jobs, have been intimately linked and partnered with the charity sector. And this has created an even larger sector, which is called the third sector. And if some of your listeners have followed British politics, they will have heard certainly Tony Blair and Brown, and now we have Mr. Cameron from the Conservative Party talking about the third way, the third sector. And what they are talking about is the fact that instead of trying to push through their political agendas simply through the normal channels, through our parliament, through civil servants, they are now injecting policy to within this expanded third sector. And it is the third sector that is pushing the government policy into very, very low levels of local and community government. And this is one of the reasons why people can see policies coming into place, but it's almost like it's an osmosis. It appears slowly and stealthily. They never actually see somebody standing up and saying, this is going to happen. Now, CCTV cameras are a perfect example of this, because they started to spring up in all cities. And maybe there were one or two articles in the paper that said, well, we need these CCTV cameras to fight crime. But there was never any real debate about whether we should have them or shouldn't have them. And then after a few years, there are so many of these cameras and so many people have got used to them that it's become a fait accompli. It's there. You can't do anything about it.
Right.
Now, what my research started to show me, and I'm pleased to say that I have now got many other people also following the same direction, is if you have created a massive third sector and you then inject into that third sector so-called leaders who have been reframed to head in a new social and political agenda, what you've really done is taken the power base away from the established government. And you are now taking control of a country from within. That's the key to it.
Yeah. It's a really, really sinister plan and the way that they do it. And I want to ask you a little bit also, Brian, about if you think that the situation right now, at least, is the worst in the UK, or have you heard from other people from other nations as well that have common purpose and the similar type of problems?
What I can tell you, because obviously I'm based in UK and most of my work is done here, but I can tell you the situation in UK is now very, very dangerous. And I'll say what I believe. What I believe we're watching at the moment is the fact that the power of our national parliament is being hollowed out. It's being hollowed out from inside. And we are starting beginning to see the movement towards collapsing our national parliament in order to allow the European system to take precedence.
Yeah.
Now, some of your listeners will say, well, this is really an amazing statement and I don't believe it. And my reply to the people who doubt what I say is that we have documentation which is showing the movement to installing the European system by deceit. We have declassified secret and confidential documents which show, as early as 1972, the intent to collapse democracy in UK by doing it out of sight to the general public.
Mm.
Now, what I found interesting is that from the talks that I've done, and particularly the web interviews and some of the TV interviews I've done, I rapidly was contacted by people from other countries, and certainly from people in the United States, and they said that they were starting to see the same techniques being used within their society. So I can certainly tell you that I've got a lot of American people who are extremely knowledgeable who are saying that they are seeing the same third sector, the same third way being set up in America.
Yeah.
The other clue we get to the system that's being used against us comes from Common Purpose themselves, because we have documentation where Common Purpose is saying that Common Purpose networks will soon be very important. Now, we first saw these documents about 18 months ago, but they are talking amongst themselves, if you like. It's Common Purpose leaders talking to other graduates, and they are saying, I'm paraphrasing, prepare yourself, because our networks will soon be very important.
Mm.
And we're now starting to see Common Purpose expand its activities to link Common Purpose cells in Europe together with the Common Purpose cells in Britain. So this network of operatives is now being spread out from UK through Europe and further afield. And I think you said to me a few minutes ago that it was also appearing in Sweden, but you couldn't see much of it.
No, exactly. So no, not yet.
The techniques are definitely being spread on a European scale. And I can tell you that we also know Common Purpose has now become very active in South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, for example.
Yes.
So I want to be careful here, because there's so much to talk about, and I don't want to be pulled too far off the key subject of Common Purpose. But I have to say that we are seeing evidence that the Common Purpose controlling networks are not just designed to control UK, they are designed to control large world regional areas.
Yes. Brian, I'm just looking here at the website called commonpurpose360.org. Have you heard about this? This seems to
yes,
be the,
I have.
You have? Okay, yeah. This is the online platform for those who are participants of Common Purpose, right?
Yes.
Hmm. So it's interesting.
And well, 360 was very interesting to us. One of the things that I've got to say is that as we've investigated Common Purpose, we have become very, very interested in the language that Common Purpose uses and the language which is used by the new political establishment in UK.
Yeah.
So, for example, I was talking earlier about a course which Common Purpose called the Matrix course.
Yeah.
And a matrix is, of course, a network. That's one description. And then we have the 360 program, which, to my mind, is indicating that the connections between people is going to be a complete circle.
Hmm.
And I'll just say what I believe, because I couldn't prove this for you, but I believe that 360 is a reference to global connections.
Yes, yes. So this could be the driving, if you will, ideology for the people who are going to administrate, if you will, the New World Order structure or system that is going in. And in one sense, again, I want to bring up that idea that to me it almost seems like it's an invasion in one sense. It's an invasion of an ideology, right, Brian?
Yes, but the absolute danger of this system is that if we go back to wherever we want to go, if we go back in the 1920s or the 1930s or even the 1950s, I'll take communist doctrine, or Marxist. We'll base it on Marx, because then we're talking fascism and communism.
Yeah.
But Marxist doctrine had to be sold to individuals. If you wanted to spread Marxist doctrine, what you had to do is you had to gather groups of people together. You had to educate them in Marx. You had to get them enthusiastic in the ideology, and then you had to select the activists who would then go out and spread the word. But the techniques that you were using were normal teaching techniques. You might use rhetoric, you might use heavy-handed indoctrination by giving people a lot of material over a very short space of time and putting them under pressure. People who sat in the classroom, for want of a better term, knew what they were looking at, and their minds dealt with the material on a normal basis. What is so utterly dangerous about what we're seeing, not only with Common Purpose, but we're seeing neuro-linguistic techniques being pushed through other courses, is that people's minds can be changed without them even knowing that they have been changed. And again, I'm going to say, for listeners who doubt this, do the research yourself, and you will find that neurolinguistics, with a skilled operator, is quite capable of changing not only a person's political views, but more importantly, their world and social views in a very short space of time.
So
it's dangerous because NLP is a form of hypnosis, but you will not be aware it's being done to you unless you have some knowledge of NLP yourself. Now, if I reinforce this system, have you heard of a company called Amway?
Amway? No, I haven't.
Well, I'm going to say many people have, and certainly many people in America, Britain and America. This was a network marketing company, and it became very, very big about 10 years ago. And the way it worked is that instead of setting up shops where you were going to sell a product to people, what you did is you recruited a person, and when they sold your product, they earned a percentage based on how much they sold. They were also taught how to go out and recruit other people who would then work for them, and they would get a proportion in addition to their own percentage. They would get a proportion of the percentage that was paid to the people they recruited.
Right, right.
So what you were doing was shifting very, very large quantities of a product by using a network of people that was itself recruiting more people into the network. Now, Amway ended in disaster because I believe there was a very big fraud scandal which brought the company down. Apologies, Amway, if I've got that wrong, but I think I'm correct. But what we can say is that with Common Purpose, for example, you are seeing this pyramid selling technique being used to promote a political ideology where people are unaware that ideology is being driven through.
Yeah.
And that is what makes it so dangerous.
A kind of a pyramid scheme in one sense, right?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Now, we said originally that Common Purpose alone has been going in UK since 1985. So this organization has been working hard, and according to its own literature, we have over 25,000 people in this country who've been trained, but we've also got common purpose in other areas.
Mm.
Perhaps equally as important, we are now seeing the neuro-linguistic techniques being applied through other courses. Now, those might be a course for management. It might be a diversity course. In fact, some of them can have perfectly innocuous names, but we're seeing the neuro-linguistic techniques being used on people predominantly within the public sector. So within school teachers, people in hospitals, people in local government. These are key people for this neuro-linguistic training, upon whom this training can be used.
Mm. Brian, do you have, or is there something that you're working on right now in regards to putting up more information about NLP, like on your website, so people can get familiar with some of the terms?
I've got to admit that I have trouble with keeping up all of the bits, so my website is a little bit stale at the moment.
All right.
But we're going to do a big update, which will include what we're learning about the neuro-linguistic side.
Perfect. Wonderful.
And really, the best bit about this is there is so much material on neuro-linguistics on the internet that people can very quickly do the research themselves.
Yes.
Once you're happy, you're confident that neuro-linguistic programming is real and it can be used, and it can be used to change your values and reframe your mind, then all I am doing is saying we're now seeing those techniques being used to change people's political and social agendas.
Mm, yeah. And sorry.
I wonder whether I can just add to that,
yeah,
by saying that within UK, we are also starting to see some very disturbing changes in people. I talked about the police earlier on, and many people say that the British police have gone from being polite and respectful to the general public to increasingly aggressive and domineering.
Yes.
Now, one of the things that we know is going on is that neuro-linguistic programming is being used within the police training academies.
Hmm.
I can prove that. We know who the people are who are doing the training. What are they giving the policemen in their training? Well, even one of the major papers, I think it was the Daily Telegraph in UK, said recently that it was evident that the police had begun to regard the British public as their enemy.
Hmm, really?
Now, that's a very, very interesting statement, and
yeah.
I think we need to ask the question, well, when did they begin to regard the public as their enemy,
yeah,
and why?
Hmm.
Now, a little while ago, I got a very good clue to this, because a young lady contacted me one evening. She'd listened to one of my talks about common purpose, and she talked about some rather unpleasant things that were happening to her personally. She said she'd talk to me again. I didn't think she would call me, but she called back a few nights later. And she said, I want to tell you something. And what she told me was this, that she had been with her partner, who was a police officer. I think it was for about 15 years. It was quite a long time. And one day he'd come home from work, and when she said to him, what have you been doing today? He said he'd been on a diversity training course. And she asked him what he did on the course, and he didn't really tell her. But a few nights later, they went out for a drink with a friend, and the friend happened to be a coloured guy. And so she said to the other guy, we'll call him John, John, what happened on that diversity training course? And he said to her, well, if I didn't understand I was black before, I do now. And what he told her is that they asked him a lot of questions. If this happened, was it because he was black? If that happened at the end of a shift, was it because he was colored? And initially he said, no, this happened to all the men.
Mm.
somebody who had no problem with working with his white colleagues.
Yes.
And they'd put a little seed in his mind that there was a problem.
So they,
now, if
they,
I return to the husband,
yeah.
About 2 months after this diversity training, the lady went on holiday with her husband, and she said to me, by the middle of the week, I knew I had to leave him because his whole personality had changed. He was very domineering. He kept talking about us, the police, having to deal with those people outside, the general public. And he'd become very aggressive. So what she was describing to me was a personality change. And I'm going to say to you, her description fits perfectly what we're seeing in a wider sense within the police force and indeed within the public sector. Local officials becoming very elitist, very aggressive if you try and challenge them.
Yeah.
Now, this is not normal. So we know that something is being done to them in order to produce this change. And I'm going to say that the overwhelming base of evidence that we've got, which includes documents and emails and recorded phone calls and testimony from witnesses and personal statements, is that people are having their normal personalities changed by techniques which are being given during courses.
This is
very sinister.
Yeah. It's really, really scary as well. And in regards to the use of language that you mentioned before, it's almost like they're bringing in, the newspeak of 1984 or whatever. And again, do you think that it also a part of NLP, that you change the way people speak, the words that they use? And is that, would you say, connected with, the idea of the political correctness that is on the rise as well?
Absolutely. Political correctness is itself a very bad term, because it detracts us from what is really going on. Political correctness is cultural Marxism.
Mm.
And it is very simple. If you control what people say, you eventually start to control how they think.
Yeah.
And I really had a personal example of this when I was stood on the stage giving a talk to, 200 people, 150, 200 people. And I hesitated for a fraction when I wanted to start talking about white people and colored people. Because my brain said, can I say this?
Yeah, I see what you mean.
So in my mind, I was experiencing a little bit of stress because I was worried, could I use these terms? So political correctness, which is everywhere, and it certainly America is suffering from this as well, but Britain is swamped with political correctness. And what this has meant is that people, in many cases, are too frightened to tell the truth, not because of what the truth is, but because what people might say under the political correct rules.
Yeah.
So in my opinion, the political correctness is part of this organized social, economic, psychological attack which is being carried out on us.
And again, the ideology that Common Purpose are driving here when they're doing their education and so forth is also about changing then the way people think about these things. And again, to veil everything in a terminology which is, well, again, on the surface supposed to be very, very non-offensive, but again, it goes away from the idea that you're not longer telling or saying things as what they really are. You know, to call a spade a spade, right?
At this point, I'd like to say something which I've started to introduce more and more, but when you look out there, for some people it is quite scary, because if you begin to understand what I'm talking about, some people start to imagine that we have thousands of little robots walking around, and that's spooky, and that frightens them.
Right.
a better way of thinking about it is that these people who've been got by these neurolinguistic techniques are victims. And so they're not all bad people by any means. Most of them are perfectly ordinary, decent human beings, but unknown to them, they've been given a course which is actually changing the way they has changed the way they think.
Yes.
And even if we look at Julia Middleton herself, I've now got neurolinguistic experts saying to me that when they watch her deliver a talk, and there's some very interesting little video clips on YouTube that she's recently put up.
Yes.
Most people say when they watch her, she's a bit weird, the way her eyes move, the way she uses her hands. But I have now got neurolinguistic experts saying to me that Julia Middleton herself is showing signs of having been reframed.
Hmm.
And that would not surprise me, because obviously the environment that she's been working in with Demos would be the type of environment where these techniques were fermented.
Hmm.
If I may, because this is will help the historical part of this.
Hmm.
If people say, well, no, this can't possibly be true. If you do some research and you go back to a gentleman called Lewin and the Frankfurt School.
Yes.
You're going to go back to about 1920s, 1924, when you were starting to see psychologists, and in some cases psychiatrists, starting to take Marxist-type theories and interpret how masses of people could be changed over from a free democratic world into a controlled Soviet or communist world. And a guy called Alexander Luria developed a process which he called the artificial disorganization of behavior.
Hmm.
And the techniques were specifically aimed at creating mass social chaos. And in his techniques, he's actually describing specific methods of inducing an artificial disruption of the psyche.
Hmm.
He talks about an experimental disorganization of behavior. Now, these people were real. We might regard them as being totally misguided, but they believed in what they were producing. And if you look at the results from experiments, they were showing that their experiments worked. And what I think we've now got happening is that those early techniques for actually getting into communities and destroying the cohesion and the normal operating of a community, those techniques of artificial disorganization of behavior, if you like, have been brought up to date with neurolinguistic programming and implemented, as I've described, in a sort of pyramid selling situation.
Yeah.
And if I reinforce this for you, if I go to a quote by Richard Bandler, who was one of the two original NLP gurus, in 1997, he is talking about creating a global identity where there will be homogeny. There will be no diversity, no richness, no color, no difference. Everybody is the same. I think my view of heaven would be a planet like ours, living from the presuppositions of NLP. And he then goes on to say, there wouldn't be any more accusations of communism. You're a communist. Because effectively, everybody would be walking around with the same mentality.
Yeah.
Now, that is an extremely knowledgeable and clever, but I would suggest very dangerous man.
Yeah.
And if we then said that his work in neurolinguistics had been swept up by even more dangerous political bodies, we could start to see quite quickly major changes in society, and that is what we are actually seeing.
It's just incredible. It's almost like an ideology that has a life of its own in a way. It's spreading almost as a psychological disease. I don't know quite how to pin it down, but what's your ideas about that? It's almost like if people get hooked or...
You are absolutely correct. In you're trying to picture it in your mind as to how this thing works. But if I tell listeners that you can go on the website, go onto the internet and start to Google neuro-linguistic programming. And one of the things you will find is a community of people who have been neuro-linguistically trained. So they have gone on a course, they have been taught how to use neuro-linguistic programming, but at the same time, they've also been taught how to go and train other people. And when you go on the website, and perhaps you go on the website of a consultancy, of a company delivering NLP training, you will invariably find that the trainers talk about other colleagues as though they were all living in a new world. And this is exactly how this is being spread. It is not just through Common Purpose. I say to a lot of people here, Common Purpose is a vehicle.
Yes.
It's a Rolls Royce. It's specifically designed to put leaders into positions of power. But the techniques are being used through other vehicles, other courses, including raw neuro-linguistic training. Now, the reason that I am a very happy man at the moment is that I have recently been contacted by several people who are very experienced neuro-linguistic trainers, and far from attacking me, what they've actually said is they are also extremely concerned to see neuro-linguistic techniques being used, the English expression is willy-nilly, being used here and there with no proper control. And that includes within the training for young school children, which is unbelievably serious.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe we can talk a few minutes about that, Brian. I want to talk about how this has infected itself into the school system, but also the media connections, the participation of the Common Purpose agenda by the mainstream media. These are huge problems, and these are, you know, places, so to speak, that people go to get information about what is going on in the world. But if they are changing as well, and if they are using some of these techniques as we've been talking about, that could also further spread the agenda, obviously.
They are
and right.
It's well, hard exactly. to go anywhere better than Britain to see it at the moment.
Yeah.
Because the quality of our national media, whether it's TV or radio or newspapers, has declined dramatically in the last 5 years. We are seeing no real analytical journalism in the national papers. We are seeing an increasingly cartoon look to our national newspapers. And the BBC, which we can prove and we have proved, is riddled with Common Purpose graduates, is constantly giving a pro-government political line, to the extent it is very, very rare that the BBC ever shows any news from outside UK. We don't hear what's going on in France and Germany or Sweden or Norway. We only hear very short clip sound bites as to what is actually happening in Britain. And I believe that this is deliberate manipulation of the national media in order to keep the wider population in UK in an introverted frame of mind. So certainly the media in this country is affected by Common Purpose, and I'm going to come back to my experts. My experts are now telling me that they are totally aware of neuro-linguistic techniques being used in the presentation of news whether it's visual or it's audio on the radio. So this is happening. The other thing I'd mention, because I'm going to encourage listeners to go and have a look for themselves, but about 2 years ago, Julia Middleton was suddenly involved with a new organisation called the Media Standards Trust.
Right.
And this organisation, which conveniently had offices within the Common Purpose offices, was going to be working with all of the British media to ensure its fairness and openness and impartiality. To which I suggest to people that what Common Purpose is going to do with the Media Standards Trust is the exact opposite.
Yeah.
They are going to work to close down our national media to ensure that it's only towing the desired political line. There's another point to the Media Standards Trust, and that is that when we look at the trustees, the directors, if you like, we again find this totally elitist structure with people from very high corporate positions, and again including the major international banks, including Rothschild.
Yeah.
So on one hand, we have Julia Middleton saying that, well, really, she's a very ordinary lady and she's just trying to help people in local communities. But the next minute, we see her sitting shoulder to shoulder with major international banking figures. And we then start to say, why are the banks so interested in national media?
Yeah, that's right. And this is, again, you mentioned the this is the Media Standards Trust, is that right?
Yes, Media Standards Trust. I'm afraid I can't remember the website off the top of my head, but you will find it if you just put Media Standards Trust UK in.
Yeah, it's simply Media Standards standardstrust.org. That's the main website for them.
Have you just found it?
I just found it. Yep, absolutely. It was a link from Wikipedia.
Can I just ask you how long we've got? Because I really would like to be able to cover the children, because we've just touched on education.
Let's do that in the last few minutes here then, Brian, and finish up on that note, I think. That would be good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, from their own literature, it is apparent that Common Purpose is extremely interested in school children. And they're running a number of programs where they are particularly targeting children of about the ages of 13 upwards. One of the key programs is called Your Turn. And within the programs, Common Purpose leaders are taking groups of children and they are talking them through society, changes in society, and they are particularly explaining to them the benefits and advantage of the European Union. So at its simplest level, we are starting to see children being indoctrinated with a political agenda through the work of Common Purpose. Now, what is a certainty is that the average parent has no idea that their children are being exposed to this sort of training. We also know that within UK, there are a number of training techniques which are being used. And in this instance, I am not specifically talking about Common Purpose. But we know that young children, perhaps as young as 6 and 7, are being exposed to what's known as creative visualization. And this is where groups of children are taken on journeys in their mind by visualizing images and places. In fact, creative visualization is a form of neuro-linguistic programming. And I have a document which was written by a school teacher who was given some of this training in creative visualization in Leeds with some of her colleagues. Leeds is a major city in the centre of UK. And what she reports is that after the training, some of her colleagues experienced very dark, dangerous images in their minds disturbing images which they couldn't get rid of. And she had then written a letter complaining to the local authority that she was very worried about what this training could do to the minds of young children. Now, I followed this lead up, and I have documentary evidence establishing that this training, as described, did take place. I was eventually able to talk to the trainer, who was a gentleman who simply had a degree, a combined degree in psychology and geology, but he had been running this form of neuro-linguistic training. And when I challenged him on any dangers of it, he said, well, maybe 2%, 2 to 3% of people might have some form of adverse effect. Now, if we are looking, which we most certainly are, at hundreds of thousands of school children being given this type of neuro-linguistic training, we should expect to see quite large numbers of children starting to show adverse mental health effects.
Mm.
And this is happening, although the British media at the moment is not reporting it. I can tell you that in South Wales, within a very limited geographic area, over the last 3 years, 29 young people have committed suicide.
Mm.
In Northern Ireland, again, totally unreported in the British media, we are finding geographical clusters of young people committing suicide. Mm. And at the moment, there is absolutely no central government interest and action into establishing the cause of these suicides. Mm. I know this is a terribly serious subject to end our talk on.
Right, yeah.
But I'd like to say to you, Henrik, that when I began looking at Common Purpose, I reverted to being a military officer, and I quickly came to the conclusion that what we were actually looking at in British society, at least, was a deliberate attack on our society.
Yeah.
The attack is psychological, it's social, it's economic.
Hmm.
And all of the research that I have done, and I am now supported by a lot of people who include ex-military people, ex-police officers, ex-legal people, what we are seeing is an organized conspiracy to actually collapse the democracy in the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
And the people who are driving this are of the same malicious mentality that were prepared to create the Bolshevik Revolution,
mm,
or the rise of the Nazi Party with the subsequent actions. This is not some form of benign new political process. These are extremely dangerous people who are herding us like animals,
yeah,
into their vision of a new world order.
Yeah.
And I have no doubt at all that in Britain, at least, the society that these people are looking to create will have absolutely no regard for the personal safety, health or welfare of the average individual, because they are elitists and they regard us as animals.
Hmm.
I know that is an extremely hard-hitting statement, but to my professional mind is that we are actually at war because these people are attacking us.
Yeah.
It's just so many of people in society have not yet woken up to how dangerous the encroaching new world order is.
That's right. And the first step towards remedying the situation is to look at the problem and recognize it for what it is. And I totally agree with you, Brian.
It is the beauty of the system that on one hand we are faced with
Yeah, that's
what
right.
What they are doing is done in the dark. It's hidden. It's done by deceit.
Mm.
And the moment enough people know what is happening, their plan is finished, because it's a covert plan. It can only work when it's hidden from view. All we have to do is wake up enough people to actually understand, one, they're being attacked, and two, how it's being done. And then we have the opportunity to overturn the process. Now, I'd like to give this one to your listeners, if I may. In Britain, myself linked together with a number of other people who were all fighting this new order,
mm-hmm.
We've set up another group, which is called the British Constitution Group. We have a website, which is www.thebcgroup.com. That's all one word, thebcgroup.org.uk.
Right.
In January, the group set up a conference up in the Midlands, which we had over 500 people, and our policy, or the policy of the speakers, was to tell the audience the truth, the hard truth about what was happening. Since that day, we're having trouble coping with the number of emails, telephone calls, and other inquiries. And we have another conference set up in London, which is on the 13th of June, and it's in Euston, but people can get the detail from the website.
Mm-hmm.
And what we are calling for is lawful rebellion. Now, this is a very precise term, because we want people to rebel against the imposition of the new order, but we are saying that it has to be done lawfully.
Right.
And it also has to be done peacefully.
Yep.
Because if we resort to violence, we give the other side the opportunity to enact all of the anti-terrorism laws and the civil unrest laws, which will mean they can achieve the clampdown.
Yeah, that's right.
If I was to be speaking to you 6 months ago, I'd be very concerned about what was happening. I'm still concerned, but I am now very encouraged by the fact we are seeing more and more people wake up. But what we need them to do is to be brave enough to start to act. And the simplest thing for them to do is tell every other person they can what they know about what is happening, and to get them to say no whenever they get the opportunity.
Yeah. Well, I think that that's very encouraging words, Brian, to round things up on. And again, I want to just mention and relay people to the two main websites that you mentioned, CP for Common Purpose, cpexposed.com, and thebcgroup.org.uk for much more information. You mentioned an upcoming conference later on in June, but then again, you'll be this coming Friday up at Heathrow in London at the AV2 conference as well, Brian. And will you continue talking more about NLP and the connections to Common Purpose on this lecture as well, Brian?
Well, excuse me, I will be doing that. Firstly, I say that the conference is excellent. What I'm very, very impressed that Ian Crane has done is that he's bringing together on the platform speakers of different backgrounds who are going to be talking about different subjects, but those subjects collectively show how this regime is unfolding. So we've now got people with different specializations and backgrounds starting to reinforce each other in their talks and presentations, and I think that's very important. I've only got 45 minutes to speak, plus time for questions, and this is always a huge problem because
yeah.
The subject's so big, even talking about Common Purpose. But I think what I am going to focus on is that I'm going to try and show people, as simply as I possibly can, that they are being attacked. I'm going to treat it like an analysis of a military situation, because if I can show people that they are being attacked, then I shouldn't have to motivate them much to get them to do what needs to be done to look after themselves and their families. So that's how I'm going to try and focus it, and we'll see whether it works.
Absolutely. Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing your talk there, Brian. We're going to be there as well. And again, for people who are interested in coming there, kind of a last minute thing here, but it's this coming Friday, the 29th. Go to the Alternative View website, avii.co.uk, for more information about that. Or again, if you want to see Brian talk later on in June, head on over to thebcgroup.org.uk for more information about that. So, Brian, keep up the excellent work. Thank you very much for coming on today with us and sharing your information about the Common Purpose. Very, very important program. So keep up the great work, and I'm looking forward to seeing you and your talk in London.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and thank you for giving me the time to speak to a few people. If they have questions, they can contact me through the website, and we do try and answer every email we get. It's difficult, though, sometimes.
I know, believe me. But again, thank you again, Brian, and we will talk more soon. So thank you for coming on.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you for listening to our program with Brian Gerrish. Our website is redicecreations.com, R-E-D-I-C-E, creations.com. We are going to attend the Alternative View Conference this weekend, so we'll be away this coming Sunday. But we'll be back next Thursday with Georgia Lambert. Until then, take good care and check out our member section for full access to our radio archive, webcasts, films, and video interviews. My thanks to producer Fredrik. We will talk more soon.